This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Vermont has laid claim to cartoonist Alison Bechtel, making her its third and current cartoonist laureate. The weekly 7 Days newspaper has been a longtime supporter of her work, publishing her long-running Dykes to Watch Out For strip until it ended its regular run in 2008. Bechtel is known the world over for her graphic memoir Fun Home, which was adapted for Broadway. She won a MacArthur Genius Grant in 2014. And when people talk about women in movies, they often use something known as the Bechtel test. Does the work of fiction have at least two women who talk to one another about something other than a man? Fans of Bechtel and those who are Bechtel curious can now see an exhibition of her work at UVM's Fleming Museum. And I met up with the artist herself last Friday to walk through the gallery. Given Bechtel's fame, I wondered if she could take some credit for some of the visibility of gay and lesbian people in current mainstream media.
Well, yeah, I was part of a vast movement of people all working toward that end, you know, visibility and equality. And that's what motivated me for a long time in doing Dykes to Watch Out For. And I don't like to say this because it feels sort of negative, but I do feel like I always have to make clear that Dykes never really did cross over. It never quite, I mean, it did here in Vermont. 7 Days began running it, which was such a wonderful breakthrough to have a paper that was not a gay paper carry my work. But that was a huge breakthrough. And that happened in 1997. So I'd been doing it for 12, 13 years before that, not ever getting that kind of recognition. Sorry if I'm making this a downer of a story.
No, you're not at all. I think accuracy, first of all, is key in our biz. But you have brought Dykes to Watch Out For back to the newspapers in the past year or so and reflected on some of the political goings-on and your characters who, you know, many people would remember who had read them before and see it as sort of a reunion, but also a reflection on the political climate. What compelled you to feel like doing that?
It was just part of my general shock and horror at what happened in November of 2016. I had very happily abandoned my comic strip and my characters for the whole length of the Obama administration. It just sort of worked out that way. I stopped writing it in 2008 for many reasons.
That was a couple years after Fun Home had come out?
Yes. I just was getting too much other stuff I wanted to do and couldn't keep up the regular pressures of the comic strip. And I remember I would often go out and do public events and people would say, oh, what are your characters doing? What do you think they're making of the current political scene? And I would be like, I don't know. I don't care. I don't think about them. But as soon as Trump was elected, I felt my characters just rushing back into me with this, you know, just all of their various opinions and theories and fears and anxieties. So it was very cathartic for me to do a few strips showing what they were up to.
Some of them have grown up. You know, there's a character named Raffi who was a kid the last time everybody saw him. And so you have these characters who are now sort of adults.
Well, that was one thing I always did in my comic strip. It happened in real time, so I was very careful to have children age, and adults get more and more wrinkled and gray. So here I was faced with this interesting problem. It was 8 years since I had last drawn these characters. Was I going to pick up where I had left off, or was I going to age them? So I tried to age them. Certainly it was easier with the kids. Yeah, Raffi is now in college. JR, the little girl, went from being 5 to being 13, and she's got blue hair. And
you know, I was also interested to see some of the cultural references. I never know how to say this word, but to hygge, 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 you know, yeah, whatever it is. The word for comfortable. And I wonder how you feel in that case that your strips from, you know, 2000 have aged. Do they show this wonderful moment in time, or do they sort of transcend time?
I always thought of my comic strip as a kind of an archive, a kind of repository for the specific cultural moment that it was happening in. And in terms of being a lesbian, that was important to me, like to show the reality of our lives over these years in the 80s and 90s. But increasingly, I just wanted to capture time and culture, and, you know, these things happen in specific moments and constellations, and I liked to try and show that. So it might be dated, but I hope it's dated in at least an interesting way.
Do you go back and look at them at all, other than doing things like this, compiling for your archives and for your exhibits?
I sometimes do, because I end up having to, like, go find something for someone. And then I find myself getting sucked into the story and, it's always kind of fun and surprising, like, oh man, this is really good.
That's got to be a nice feeling, actually, to think, oh, I was good at this. I am good at this.
It is. Well, the earlier work is weaker, and I try not to look at that. But
do you have any of that here?
I believe so.
Would you show us?
Yes, let's go look at some bad comics. Okay, here's a good one. This is my very first episode with my recurring characters. For a long time, for the first several years, I didn't have the courage to draw the same characters again, like to introduce real repeating characters. But finally I did in 1987. This is my sketch of that first episode. And although obviously I have my own warm feelings about it, it's not a great comic strip. It's totally just sort of stereotypical characters. There's the repressed character, and then there's this flirtatious character who's the opposite of her, and they're joking about dating, and I don't know, it just feels sort of lightweight to me now.
I guess you could see it in a different way and say you had these molds that may have been very familiar or obvious to people, but then you were able to build onto them and build more character and nuance.
Yeah, that's what fortunately happened once I set a storyline in motion with these characters, then they were able to, take on more depth over the years. This is so weird. I'm seeing stuff I didn't even know they had. I know that one of the curators went down to Smith College, where my papers are in their archives, and she obviously dug all this stuff out, these little sketches and samples.
So you didn't edit this exhibit?
No, I didn't.
I've always wanted to ask you about something that you talk about, I believe it's in Fun Home, about your process and how you take photographs to help you get the right positioning for the characters as you draw them. And so you'll take a picture of yourself and then look at the picture as you draw the character doing that motion. Is that still one of the ways that you draw?
It is. I'm trying to wean myself away from that. I mean, obviously, in the early days, I didn't have digital photography. I couldn't do that. So I would just have to draw out of my head. Or if it was something very tricky, I'd look in the mirror. Or if it was super tricky, I would use a Polaroid. But Polaroid photos were so expensive, I had to be very sparing with those. But I miss the more gestural, cartoony quality of my drawing in those early days before I was using the camera so much. So I'm trying to be less reliant on it.
You wanted to talk a little bit about some of your work that really reflects on or talks about Vermont. Can we talk about this work?
Yeah. This is a piece I did for a book called State by State, 2008, I guess. I have to look at the label on the wall. This is interesting because it was after my book Fun Home had come out and was very successful, and I started getting asked to do other kinds of things, like not just gay things. So this was a big, exciting breakthrough for me to just be part of this book. They had a different writer do an essay about each of the 50 states. It was based on a WPA project from the 30s. They were going to modernize it, update it. So this is my little 8-page essay on Vermont. It was really a challenge to, comics take up a lot of space, sort of. So it was a challenge to get a whole kind of meaningful statement about Vermont into my allotted 8 pages. And I ended up writing about how I got here and what I love about Vermont, and some of the history of Vermont, some stuff about Ethan Allen, which I had never known. He became sort of my hero.
Really?
Yes. Well, I started learning about all the secessionist activity, and I found that very appealing. I think Vermont is so special and so idiosyncratic. I kind of wish we would secede some days.
Let's get a little closer. Let's look at it.
I grew up in the country, but then when I came out as a young person, the only way I could have any kind of life was to go to the city, because that's what gay people did. But I didn't really like being in the city. I spent 10 years living in cities in New York and then in St. Paul and Minneapolis, and then I got involved with someone who lived in Vermont, and I came here to visit at the height of foliage season, and this woman picked me right up at the airport and took me to Camel's Hump, and we climbed Camel's Hump, and I was just in love. I thought I was in love with her, but I was really in love with Vermont. Well, I guess they sort of got all mixed up for me. And that was pretty much it. I moved here soon after. And what I loved about Vermont was that I could live here in the country, in a rural place, but also I felt very safe and very, you know, it's such a progressive atmosphere. As a lesbian, I felt safe here in a way that I wouldn't have felt living in my home state of Pennsylvania at that point in time, or even now, perhaps.
This is in some ways designed to be, if not a retrospective, at least a look back at your career. You stopped doing Dykes to Watch Out For as a frequent strip in 2008. You've done graphic novels since. You've had Fun Home made into a Broadway play. You've won a MacArthur Genius Grant. What is the next challenge for you? What are you doing now that moves you forward?
That is my challenge. It's funny having so much success. I've always been very motivated by failure or by fear of failure. So I'm struggling to complete my current project, which is another memoir about aging and the body and physical fitness, trends in physical fitness. But I have to say it's going kind of slowly because it's hard to, I don't know. In a way, I've been really busy, and the play, even though I had nothing really officially to do with that play, it was very distracting while it was happening. I would often travel to see it and do stuff to promote it. So it's been hard to get back into my own life, and I can't really function unless I have a routine, unless I have a very regular life. So I've been kind of slowly like healing and adjusting back to a regular work routine.
You've also both said over the years and projected over the years that doing media appearances, talking about yourself, doing interviews, being on camera is not something that fills you with joy or doesn't energize you. This is not something that you love doing.
Have I said that? I feel like I shouldn't say that publicly, certainly not to an interviewer.
I think you've said it to me in emailed responses about why you won't do an interview
right.
This time.
No, I absolutely hate it, honestly, Jay. I'm sorry to say. I hate it.
So how have you been able to function over the last 5 years then when, I mean, you have been so much in the spotlight, and you can say no to things, but you can't and don't say no to everything. And, you know, every couple of years I wrote to you an email this time saying, I haven't bugged you in a few years.
No,
how about now?
No.
So, I mean, it must be hard to continually, while appreciating your success and appreciating the people who love your work, to have to put yourself out there publicly.
It is. But fortunately, at a certain point, you don't have to do it as much. I mean, I never questioned it in the old days. Of course I would do an interview with anyone who wanted to talk to me. My God, I would drop everything. But there's not really that same motivation to do it. So I don't, unless I have to.
Do you feel like you have to do this one?
I do.
Why?
Well, I mean, I want people to come see the show. I'm excited about the show. I want to support the Fleming. I mean, it was so nice of them to do this. The least I could do is talk about it.
Well, I really appreciate you putting yourself out there and talking with us about it, a little bit about your artwork. And there's so much more to see and so many panels that it would be boring if we just sat there and looked at them and read them side by side together. So I won't make our listeners listen to that. But a lot of really interesting work to see. So thank you for talking about
thank
it with us.
Thank you, Jane. This was great.
Self-Confessed, the exhibition of Alison Bechdel's work at the Fleming Museum, runs through May 20th.